This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, Sports with the Max. Twins and Angels tonight. Right here on News Talk A30 WCCO. What a game last night. Miguel Sano hits a home run over an easy pitch as well. Game over. Never seen what happened to the Angels. They had back-to-back hitters sustain injuries. Ohtani got hit swinging. And had to leave the game. They said he's okay. And then Simmons, a shortstop, talented kid, turned his ankle going to first base. He was the next hitter, and he's going to be out for some time. And I've never seen that happen. And this Jorge Polanco, though, I'll tell you, a few years ago I remember talking to Gene Glynn about him. Gene is now a scout, but he was the third base coach for the Twins. And Gene and I used to sit in the dugout on beautiful afternoons, visit. Those are fun times. Joe Vavra was on that staff. Back before that, Scott Alger. Anyway, we'd sit and talk about it, and Gene's a Waseca boy, and so we know a lot of the same people from southern Minnesota. He used to referee my high school basketball games when he was playing professional baseball. He'd make a buck in the off-season refereeing. And so I always had fun visiting with Gene. I got to get him on the show here one of these days. But I remember we were talking about, you know, who are the up-and-comers that look good. And I remember him talking about Polanco and raving about him. And he said he's got just such soft hands. And if you play in the middle infield, if they say you have soft hands, that's a good thing. It means the ball doesn't just, if you have what they call brick hands or 2x4 in your glove, it hits you and it pops out because you don't have that feel for it. But a guy with soft hands, the ball is almost effortless, like a feather going into their glove, and boom, they release the ball they in one motion. And you see it every night at this level. But he said he's got those soft hands, those quiet feet. Quiet feet, meaning he gets to balls easily, and he does it again. It looks effortless, you know. I have found that the definition of when somebody's really good is they make it look easy. And George Brett had a famous quote. He said, somebody's talking about how easy it looks for him to hit. And he said, you have no idea how hard I've worked to make it look easy. You have no idea how hard I have to work to make it look easy. And I think that's true of a lot of people that master their craft, you know. There are no shortcuts. There's nothing. Boom. You know, I've interviewed Michael Jordan one-on-one a couple times. And what went into him as a product, as a basketball player, it involved almost every ounce of his being and his soul to get to that level, mentally, physically, the way he trained. You know, having guys over to his house on game days and they sit in his great big sauna and just talk about what they're going to do that night and game plan. All these things that went into his makeup so that when you watched him on a given night, he would make it look easy because he'd put so much of himself into it. What's the famous line from the person that plays the piano? The outstanding piano player. Let's just say it's Liberace. It doesn't matter. And a guy listens to him play, and he says, man, I would give my life to be able to play like that. And Liberace, or whoever it is, says, that's exactly what I've done. I've given my life to play like that. And that's how hard it is. And that's how hard it is to be good. And Polanco has some of that, you know, as he continues to work. And he's leading the American League in hitting, and he's got a watchful eye, and he's got some of those things that he's developing. Some of it's natural, you know, soft hands. I don't think you teach soft hands. I think either you have that or you don't. But some of the other things, it just comes from repetition and work, and now he's seeing the fruits of his labor, and he's making it look easy. Great broadcasters do. They step in there, and it seems like they're just having a conversation with you, and you don't realize all the preparation that's gone into it. Now, I remember on this show, on WCCO, growing up, Herb Carneal doing the play-by-play, right? And he'd slide right into, as John Gordon, he'd say, slide right into that chair, hardly know he's there, and he'd call a perfect game and he'd walk out. And he made it sound so easy. And I can remember driving into Met Stadium, and you know, on a Twins day game, right? And you'd hear the ad for Wally McCarthy, Lindahl Olds, and Bill Deal. Remember that? Free hot dogs and popcorn and pop. He's like, well, how are they going to stay in business? They're giving that away. Bill Deal for Wally McCarthy Oldsmobile. And you become in the Mets Stadium, and part of the ambiance was, you know, get yourself ready for the game. You're listening to WCCO. And I can remember the pregame show that they had. And everything was just, I didn't realize at the time, but it was clinical. And they had the right mix of people and the right content. And I went back and I tried to find some of that because I figured it would help me with my own game. If I listen to it now that I've been broadcasting for a while, maybe I could put some of this and implement it into my game. And this is the clip that I came across. This is from 1976 Twins pregame show.
Took a vote on Reggie Jackson, it'd be 23-2 to get rid of him, and I think Jackson.
Sparky Lyles walked, took himself out of that same game that Jackson.
Sparky Lyle did not take himself out of that game. Martin permits Sparky Lyle to take himself out of those games.
Sparky Lyle, in anger, took himself out of the game. If I can quote
himself
a,
out of the game.
If I can
Chuck,
quote a writer.
Just stick to the farming, and you'll be fine.
Well,
I mean, Sparky Lyle did not
have to look
take
through here to find the article.
I don't
article.
Care what they say in Newsweek. I know the facts. I know he let Sparky Lyle take himself out of games at all times, and. A lot of these guys write, I mean, it's not sensational, they're not interested in writing it, okay?
Okay, Sparky Lyle, who had angrily removed himself from the same game in defiance of Martin, and escaped with a $500 fine that
That's
was later rescinded.
Newsweek knows as much about that as you do, none.
And it was just so seamless and just so easy listening, you know, as you'd come in and hear a pregame show like that. I'll do anything to play that clip. Earlier today... That's what Ryan Saunders wants. He wants to make it look easy on the sidelines. He's only 33 years old. He's got a lot of work to do. So they had the press conference. I was there, and like I said, I said Towns. And I'll tell you something interesting about Carl Anthony Towns a little bit later in the show in terms of what he's doing in the offseason because I was shocked when I talked to him about it. But Ryan Saunders is now the head coach. And so after the press conference, we went into a locker room, we sat down, and we talked. Hear now that conversation.
Digging a trench that you've already started digging on, what's the first thing you have to do when you're the permanent head coach versus the interim head coach?
Well, I think the process is, in terms of the relationships, you know, having that jump start of that head start on, you know, knowing the guys, knowing their strengths, knowing the things that they can improve upon as players, but then also knowing how they're, you know, what they can respond to and what might they not respond to is definitely a positive of being having already had 42 games. But there's going to be changes. There will be noticeable changes, I think, in the way we play, both offensively and defensively. And then I want to see changes in the way we approach things, too. I want things to be different. I want things to be high energy in a lot of ways and really make sure that we keep these players sharp and we're able to maximize their abilities.
Relationships. You know, I heard Mike Krzyzewski say once he figured out coaching was all about relationships, mm-hmm. he became a lot better coach.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I mean, having a relationship with a guy that you control his playing time, it probably defining part of being an NBA coach is how well you do that, right?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And I'd use an example. You know, there was a player this year who I felt it was best that he did not play for, you know, a few games, mm-hmm. That somebody else was playing better. And for that reason, and it was a player that I'm extremely, extremely close to. And for that reason, you know, like always, if I'm going to change a player's minutes rotation-wise, if it's a set kind of a set plan, I'm going to have a conversation with them. And they don't always like it, but ultimately they'll respect that honesty. And then if you have that relationship, they'll respect the fact that you think it's what's best for the team, but they won't always like it.
Do you want them to come in the office and say, I think you're wrong, coach? I mean, do you want that kind of relationship where it's give and take all the time? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, it can't be all the time, because there's going to be situations where every day, you know,
you don't have time to explain it.
You can say, hey, you know, somebody can come in and say, hey, I think we should practice at 11:05 instead of 11. You know, I mean, it's going to be something where, yeah, and taking that interim tag off, that helps in terms of, you know, being able to have that level of leadership and that I guess that line in a way that it makes it more where it's hey, this is the way it's going to be. We're going to talk about it, but we're not going to have issues on that.
We heard Gerson talk about overall wellness, too. Mm-hmm. What does that mean when he uses that term mm-hmm. in terms of changing the way we do things overall wellness? What does that mean?
It means everything in terms of on the court. It means you know, off the court, but it means also what goes into getting players ready to be on the court. So that's strength, that's wellness in terms of mental wellness, psychological wellness, just training room in terms of correctives and really making sure that we have the best the best group and the best equipment to make sure that these guys' bodies are ready to take on an 82 plus game season. So all the wellness things go into it.
When you talk about owning the locker room in the NBA, that's so important because your group is so small. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you when you say when you walk in the locker room, you need to own it?
It means that they need to know who is making the final decisions, but they also need to know that the person who's making those final decisions is making them for the betterment of the team and not for other agendas or other reasons.
And they have to believe that wholeheartedly.
And they have to believe that. The belief of that is big. And having a belief in one, leadership, but having a belief in each other too as players, that's going to be something that's big. And I think that's something that's you're seeing more and more in terms of what you'd say the modern NBA or today's NBA game.
And what style would we see that we didn't see last year if we came out here and said, well, that's different?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a work in progress, you know, in terms of this summer. You don't want to give everything away in the summertime. But, you know, obviously, you know, just on basic, broad thinking, you'd like to see more three-point shooting. With that, you know, it can be schematic, but it can also be we need to improve as a team too. And then, obviously, defensively, there will be some changes where we feel we really need to take a jump on that to be a successful group.
Outside looking in, it looks like the obvious thing you need to address is your backcourt and get stability there. I mean, Tyus Jones is up, Derrick Rose is out, and Jeff Teague, we don't know really, kind of an uncertain based on how much he played last year. Yeah. How do you try to solve that piece of the puzzle, and is that priority one?
Yeah, it's one of the priority ones. I'd say it's going to be a aligned collaborative effort. Gerson has a great process to how he does things in terms of identifying players, identifying free agents, draft guys, things like that. And, him and I have talked about, having a say in things that maybe we didn't have a say in the past, which we like. We like that ability to challenge and connect and collaborate on things. So I trust his vision on all that. And, but we'll have a great conversation through that.
And last, I mean, even Carl Anthony Towns, young as he is, you think about how many coaches he's seen just since he's been here. Your dad drafted him.
Yeah.
Then it was Sam. Then it was Tom. Then it was yourself.
Yeah.
You can't help if you're him but think, you know, you're adjusting on the fly all the time.
Yeah.
How do you try to calm that storm and give stability? Because these guys, Wiggins too, I mean, they've seen so many different people in charge already.
Yeah. I mean, a day like today I think helps.
Yeah.
I think he sees the confidence in both Gerson and myself for our individual abilities to bring a group together and to further the development of this team into a winning, really consistently sustainable winning team. But also he sees our confidence in each other, and having that is a big thing.
Doesn't do and good and bad.
Ryan Saunders, following his press conference today at Target Center. One of the other things that we used to do back in the day at CCO was on Saturdays they'd do kind of a college football final, and they'd play fight songs. They'd play fight songs from different schools. I think it was Bill Deal. He'd just cue it up and say, hey, let's send on Wisconsin. And they just play the song. They don't do that in AM radio anymore. It's a lost art. It's too bad. We used to be able to just crank it up. Not when I was working. That long gone. But because of licensing agreements and cost of, we don't play music, we play bumper music only. But back in the day, they used to do that, and they just, if it was a Big Ten school or someone close to a good fight song, they'd play it. So as we go to break, let's salute those glorious days gone by when the fight songs were played right here on WCCO.
We're loyal to you, Northside High. Well, fighting away, Northside High. How do you like that?
I always promise myself I won't feel sorry for myself because of weather that... Your happiness is determined not by the conditions that surround you, but by your peace of mind. Happiness is not the conditions that surround you. It is your peace of mind. I'd love to give a peace of mind to Mother Nature right now, though. Good Lord, how long? What did we do here in Minnesota? What did you guys do? And it wasn't me to upset the weather gods so much that we can't cut a break. Not just this spring, last spring, too. Like 6 years, I was looking back, because I pay attention for how we cover high school sports. And I think of the 6 years, four of them have been just awful in terms of cold and rain and yuck. And I'm thinking, what did you people do? I know I've been above board on this thing. I don't know what it is that you did to anger them like that, though. If you figure it out, let me know. John Anderson, Gopher baseball coach, is going to join us not far away. They're down in Omaha to play in the Big Ten baseball tournament. Always fun to visit with John about a number of topics, including, you know, just that, because you have to have the right mindset as a leader to get your team through difficult circumstances like the weather this year. And you've got to somehow get them to block out the fact that it's cold and go play baseball. Now, think about that. If you can do that, if you can master that, if you can play in the cold and say, okay, I can still play good baseball in the cold, you can do lots of things in life because you are now what? You are empowering your mind. You're empowering your mind to take over and to control your attitude. And if it controls your attitude, good things will happen. And the longer I go, man, grit and attitude, grit and attitude, grit and attitude. Good attitude, great grit, you're employable for life. But there's nothing fancy about it. You know, grit and attitude. And on Sunday, you know, I'm afforded, you know, as a kid growing up, I keep hearkening back to some of this, but a lot of this has come back to me today at that press conference because you think about Flip Saunders and Ryan Saunders, and, you know, Sid Hartman covered them both, you know. I mean, it's just incredible, you know. And on Sundays, I get a chance to be part of the sports huddle, which was in existence when I was in elementary school. And now I'm a part of it. It's like, whoa, you know, with Sid and Dave. And it's I mean, I do my best to come up. I get a lot of guests for them and stuff like that. But it's somewhat humbling. And I think about the many, many great moments they've had in almost 40 years of that production.
Fred?
Yep.
Fred, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Sid.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Fred?
Yeah, Sid, he's there. I don't know what's wrong with your headset, but he's there, yeah. Go ahead.
Fred?
Yes?
You there, Fred?
Yes, he's there.
Okay. Fred, let me ask you something. You what about the other guys you look for some of those guys to stay or leave? Like, they had 2-year contracts. You think those guys going to hang around, you think?
I'm sorry, which guys, Sid?
I'm pushing the wrong whatchacallit, I guess.
Well, Sid, he's asked. He said, which guys are you talking about?
I'm talking about the scouts and all those people with the Timberwolves.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sid. I hope so, Sid. I think.
Hello.
Guys,
yeah, he's doing. He's fine. I don't know what's wrong with your headset or something. But
I'm turning wrong. What you call?
All right, Fred. Fred, you continue. You and I will talk until we figure out what's wrong with his headset. But anyway,
so proud to be a part of that production. John Anderson, guys. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Twins and Angels tonight. Gopher baseball team tomorrow night, late night. In Nebraska, taking on Nebraska. That's where we find John Anderson right now. In Omaha, where the Big Ten tournament is going down. John, you just got done with practice. Tell us about the facility that you're playing in.
Well, TD Ameritrade, obviously a beautiful facility. You know, $130 million facility and hold the College World Series. And ironically, I was on the NCAA Baseball Committee when they were building it and designing it and had an opportunity to voice some opinions about that process. So it turned out to be pretty special.
Well, what is it used for outside the College Baseball World Series?
Well, Creighton University plays there, plays some games there. And I think they're slowly but surely trying to find different events to move in there. So, but yeah, it's when you think about it, to build that type of facility for a couple of weeks, I think it speaks to where our game's at. And in terms of the NCAA tournament and the College Division One baseball game and the interest in that it has.
Do you like it? I mean, as you walk through the facility, is it kind of awe-inspiring?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, very much. Yeah, very inspiring. Has all the bells and whistles from the suites to the special dining areas to wide concourses to, you know, the club rooms. And they have 4 locker rooms they built in there for the College World Series and 2 batting cages on either side behind the dugouts. And so it was done with a lot of thoughtful discussion, done the right way. And you know, they really built quite the facility.
John, before we get into your team and the battle of that, you last year in that super regional at Oregon State, that was so much fun to watch, both when you played at the University of Minnesota to get there. And then at Oregon State, they've got that great program, but it was kind of cold out there. They had this good team and these first-round draft picks and on and all that. What was that like to experience that?
Well, obviously the weather wasn't, very good. We played the game the first night, started playing in a light rain, which was surprising to me. I thought that took away from some of it a little bit, but, you know, they play a lot of games, I guess, in the rain out there in the springtime, and didn't seem to really bother anybody there. I was kind of surprised. TV drives some of that, but it was a special experience against a great team and, very talented team. Obviously won the national championship, and it was a fun challenge, and unfortunately we didn't win a ball game there, but I think we learned some more about what it takes to perform at that level, and we'll use it going forward and try to build a team again here that can compete at that level.
So I want to ask you, though, about, and only Bud Grant might have the same secrets that you have, because you have endured two horrible springs here. The last two springs have been horrible in Minnesota by all accounts, and well, you've had access, and this year you had no access to the U.S. Bank Stadium. But as a coach, part of it is navigating your team through a season, and even when the circumstances are difficult, you've seen a lot of bad springs over the years. You've coached many years as you have. What advice do you give coaches? There's a lot of high school coaches that are going through this spring season. Is there something you try to do when Mother Nature does not cooperate continuously and it's so easy to get down and discouraged?
Yeah, well, we talk all the time in our program, control the controllables. Those are the things you can control, and it's your attitude and your effort and your mindset. Whether we're practicing indoors or outdoors, and we practice indoors today, hitting the cages because it's been raining. It's cold here all day today. So once again, this spring, Mike, we practice more indoors than we have outdoors. Mm-hmm. So I think you tell your players, regardless of where you are, there is an opportunity here to make yourself better today. And it's not always going to be perfect. You're not always going to have the great weather. You're not always going to be on a baseball field. So wherever we're at, let's try to find a way today to have a great attitude and find a way to make ourselves better as players and better as a team. And I think as a leader of the program, I think you set that tone. And if you're not down and you're not discouraged and disappointed and you show up with the right attitude and your willingness to try to help them get better, then I think that does help. But we really try to just control the things we can. We can't control Mother Nature. And, coaching at Minnesota for as long as I have, it's part of who we are. The weather is part of who we are. And I tell the recruits all the time, don't come here if you're soft and you're not willing to deal with some of the elements, because we're gonna play in them, and they're going to impact what we do in each and every day. And so, you have to have quality indoor facilities, and that's what we do have at Minnesota, and that's helped as well.
For sure. When you get the kid, and it might be weather-related, it might be anything, but with the kid that's got Ron Gardner, as used to say, that fat lip, where they are feeling sorry for themselves. And in college is probably the easiest time to have that happen, because you're used to something, and now it's taken away a lot of times. What's your counsel when you bring that kid into the office, and you can just tell they're not getting what they want out of whatever it is, and they've got ability, and you've seen kids go through this process so many times where they get down before they get up again. What's that conversation like?
Well, first and foremost, don't go, sit in the corner and crawl in the ball and feel sorry for yourself here. There are things we can do today to improve and get better, and there's so much about the game that you need to work on, whether it's plan and approach at the plate, and got videotape you can watch, and you can talk about situations and different things that you have to do. It's not physical. This game takes a high level of baseball IQ and mental awareness and being able to understand the game and how it's played and being able to respond quickly to different things that come up in the course of the game. So there's so much you can work on that's not just related to the physical part of the game, but the mental and emotional part of the game and your baseball IQ and working on your plan and approach and how people are trying to get you out and adjustments you can make. The game's about making those adjustments. And so there's so many things. I think sometimes when you're just on a baseball field, I think you can get caught up in just going out there and throwing the bats and balls out there and just doing the same thing over and over again. And I think the one thing that I've noticed, because we have to plan for days like this spring, that you get creative and you really work on some of the finer points of the game and just don't get caught up in working on the physical part. And I think that can make a difference in your team when the physical and the mental, the baseball IQ, the ability to make good decisions, quick decisions under stress and under pressure because you're prepared, can make a big difference in your team and your season.
Do you do that where you'll get everybody out in the field and you'll go through, you know, we talk about situational baseball, you know, and you take the fungo bat out with a runner and you know, a guy's on first base, he hits the left field, and the left fielder's got to decide to throw to third, throw to second, all those things. Do you find that if you just do situations, it's not the specific situation, it's that you get them thinking two and three steps ahead. Is that possible to do that with a kid, or do they either have that or they don't?
No, I think it can be taught. You know, it's repetition. You know, it's you know, execution at the moment. You know, recognition, situation recognition, execution at the moment. Being able to recognize it and be able to make that decision of whether, you know, there's a runner on first and base hit the left center. Do I throw the ball to third base or I go to second base to keep the double play intact? And where's the game at? Who's the base runner? You know, what the speed of the base runner is and all those, where the ball was hit and all those different factors and those things you can work on, and you can rep them and you can talk about them and you can work on them. You don't necessarily just have to play the game to do that. It helps to play the game, but first of all, you have to simulate some of those things and call that baseball 101. You've got to have some baseball IQ. And how do you get baseball IQ? You just got to be exposed and learn about all the different situations that come up and how you're going to respond and react to them.
And some, I mean, literally, you watch a good telecast with a good color commentator, you can pick up a few things once you engage yourself in that part of the game.
No question. I tell young players all the time, and these players, watch the game. You know, watch the game. You can learn a lot by watching our game because it's right out in front of you. You pay attention. What pitch are they throwing in this situation with a two-strike count in the center or a 2-0 count in this situation? When first base is open with two outs and the guy on second base and you got room to play with and how you pitch, or watch the hitters and situational hitting and how the defense performs and plays in certain situations. Watching the game of baseball, you can learn so much if you pay attention to the right things by just watching that you can use to improve your baseball IQ and improve your game.
John Anderson is our guest. They play tomorrow against the University of Nebraska in Omaha at 9 p.m. late start. John, what's the most difficult position to develop in baseball?
Well, I've always felt like catching position is a pretty difficult position. You can't have a championship team without a strong catcher. And then your middle infielders, obviously, your shortstop and second baseman, they have the most chances. And so they have a lot of different plays they have to make and so on and so forth. So I think up the middle, catcher and the middle infielders are critical to having a championship team. And if you look at our team last year with Eli Wilson back there, and then you had a third-round draft choice and shortstop All-American and Terran Vavra, and we had a fifth-year senior, you know, and Pedersen, that was part of the reason why we were pretty good. I've had people tell me, I watched our team last year, you guys caught everything on defense in the outfield and the infield, made all the plays, and that really complimented our pitching staff. And so, you know, in defense and developing players on defense is just about repetition, teaching fundamentals and then repeating them over and over and over again and understanding the game and where you need to throw the ball in certain situations.
You had Eli Wilson. You coached his father, Dan Wilson. You've probably had a few of those now over the years. Dan obviously had a storied career with the Seattle Mariners and was a great player here out of Illinois, came to Minnesota, and I don't even remember how you got him. But are they similar, and does Dad teach a lot along the way? Can you tell? And you mentioned, like, Vavra, you know, he's a product of Joe Vavra. Does that make a big difference?
I think so, yes. I think there's, you know, some baseball IQ that's developed in the family from just being around the game. Obviously, talking with his dad, watching his dad stayed involved in the game with the Mariners, still is. Since his career got over, he still keep teaching catchers and working in the organization and doing some broadcasting. So I think he learns a lot of what we're just talking about, the baseball IQ piece, understanding the game and how it's played and some of those things. And I'm sure his dad's been able to give him some awful good insight over the years. And don't leave out the gene pool. That's always pretty good place to start.
You can tell, can't you? There's certain things the kids can do that you can't explain except to say they got the right genes, huh?
Well, I can tell you when Terran Vavra came in as a freshman, he had an advanced hitting approach for a kid that was a, you know, freshman in college coming out of high school from Menominee, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That just didn't happen in Menominee, Wisconsin. That's a lot of table talk around the table and Terran hanging around at the ballpark. And he had two brothers that played college ball, minor league baseball. And so, you know, just that baseball IQ piece. He was exposed to a lot of the things that many of the kids don't get until they get to college and really start working on it and start thinking about even some of the things that he was probably talking about with his brothers and his dad when he was in high school.
And, John, last, the Big Ten tournament is on the Big Ten Network, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own because of that. How has that changed it? The Big Ten Network, one site, Big Ten tournament, everybody shows up. And, you know, this year it's in Omaha. How has that raised the profile of the Big Ten in baseball?
Well, first of all, it has a national presence. I mean, people can follow our league and our programs from anywhere today, and then throw in social media and the internet and all the things that come with it. So your exposure. I noticed the last year when we were on TV so much, the last month of the season, how many people and how many people you hear from around the country that were able to follow your team because of television, whether it's the Big Ten Network or ESPN or whoever it might be. So no question, it's impacted our recruiting. We have a wider following across the country. I think you're seeing more kids come into the league from other parts of the country, and I think it's a direct reflection of the Big Ten Network and the exposure it's given the Big Ten Conference in baseball.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and people really kind of gravitate to it this time of year. John, you get with your team. You got to have a dinner, but appreciate it very much, and good luck tomorrow night. Good to visit with you about a number of topics.
Thank you, Mike. Nice talking to you.
You bet. John Anderson. Man, has he been a pillar in that athletic department over the years. Took over for Dick Siebert. I think George Thomas was 1 year in between. And Dick Siebert was a legend. My dad played for Dick Siebert and threw out his arm before he ever had a pitch for the Gophers, a freshman. And they had a bond, though. They had a relationship. And Dick used to come out and do clinics in Gaylord in the summer. And he'd come over to our house. And I didn't quite understand it. But I just the other thing I remember about Dick Siebert was his presence was kind of bigger than life. I didn't exactly know how it all worked and what a Gopher coach and this and that. I just knew that he had a kind of a booming voice, and he was, some guys just have that presence. And when he spoke, it was like everybody stopped and listened, you know. And you see those people once in a while, coaches in particular. I had my high school football coach, Dave Main, Hall of Fame coach, great coach. And as the story goes, fact or fiction, we don't know. He loves to fish, and he's up in Canada and with some of the other coaches and teachers, and they're in a bay and they're fishing. And they've had enough fishing in that spot, according to him, for that day. And so they're in a bay with several of their boats. And so he says, put the motor down the water. Let's get out of here. And 15 boats at one time put the motor down and drove. That's a presence. Mike Max Sports to the Max, talking Twins next. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. You know, sometimes I just think about things. They come to my mind, and I wonder, and sometimes when I'm driving in the car, I'll talk to myself. You ever have that happen? You're driving down the road, and you're talking to yourself, and somebody pulls up by you, and they, you know, they're driving the same speed with you, and they look over, and it looks like you're talking to yourself, and you realize they see you talking to yourself, and so you kind of break into a song, like you're singing on the radio. That's one thing. The other thing is you quick grab the phone, like, you know, like you got them on speaker, like you're talking to somebody on speaker, and you hold up by your... Those little tricks that I've learned when you're a little off kilter, you need to learn how to adjust in life. And I've learned that along the way. Either you make it look like you're singing, or grab your cell phone and slowly bring it up like you're talking into it, like you got it on a speaker. And they won't think you're as weird as you are. Yeah. I've had some weird things happen to me over the years when I'm out on the freeway. Sometimes people, they'll recognize you, you know, from the news. And they point, and they, you know, one time I was driving Sid Hartman's car, and we were coming back from training camp in Mankato, and we were on 169. Sid was with me. Sid didn't like to drive all the time. He still could, but he just didn't like to drive to Mankato if he didn't have to. So and we're driving along. We're coming down 169. We're coming back to the cities. And we get up there right around the Jordan exit before 41. I forget the highway. There's an exit up there where you've got a number of different, I believe you've got a pizza place there and a Holiday or a Super America and a car dealership. And it's right off of 169, not far from Jordan. And there's a car next to us. And it pulls up and it's pointing at us and it's honking and blah, blah, blah. So finally we get to a spot where we stop. And I'm thinking they must recognize Sid, right? And so I roll down the window. The guy motions for me to roll down the window. And he says, hey, your mud flap is about to fall off. That thing is scraping on the back of the highway. He says, you might want to get out and get that taken care of right now because it's just flapping in the wind, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. So I wrote the window and says, what did he say? And he said, your mud flap is about to come off and we should stop and take it off. Sid says, oh, I don't believe him. Just keep going. Like the guy would hunt us down to tell us that the mud flap wasn't working. His response was, I don't believe him. In other words, there ain't no way. I don't know what a mud flap is. I don't know where to find it. And I'm sure as hell not getting out of this car to go back there and pull something off that I know nothing about. That's for Sydney. But what I wonder sometimes is, you know, how we in our era, you know people that lived through the Depression. Sid's one of them, other people, Bud Grant. I know people that lived through the Depression. And if you live through the Depression, you have a different mindset of how you value money and what you see. And we will live through, to an extent, people of my generation and your generation, the 2008 recession. And, you know, everything looked good in 2007, then 2008, it all came a tumbling down, so to speak. And I wonder sometimes if we didn't reconfigure our views on life for the rest of our lives because we saw when the real estate market crashed, we saw people out of work, we saw these things that are terrible, the imagery of the feeling of if you were gainfully employed, you felt guilty, and if you weren't, you felt desperate, and all the things that people went through during that period of time in 2008. And I wonder if we are not a different generation because of that. And then I wonder, are we a better generation because we went through that? Because maybe we learned to save for a rainy day. Because, you know, you look at all these cranes up now and you see the construction and it is thriving, man. This economy is smoking. And you wonder if we are not better served or we cannot extend this longer because we lived through a tough period of time. We knew what it was like when everything was going askew. Just a thought. Stay with us.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.